Hi, and welcome back to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. I'm Chelsea Summers, the Executive Director of Inside Public Accounting, and I have an exciting guest returning to the podcast with us today. So we've spent a lot of time on the show talking about where the profession is headed, and advisory is one of those topics that just keeps coming up, and really for good reason. So we've recently published a piece in the June IPA Insights that was a collaborative article on the state of advisory in public accounting. It pulls data from a mini survey that we facilitated this spring with 181 firms and really takes a hard look at where firms are, where they're going, and where the gaps are. And the second half of that article was written by our guest today, who has brought some really good perspectives to the data. So let me introduce him. Matt Rampe is a partner at Rosenberg Associates, where he works with CPA firms across North America on strategic planning, succession planning, partner compensation, and really developing the next generation of firm leadership. He's an accredited senior appraiser in business valuation and a certified professional coach. He's also trained in organizational change and new product design, which makes a lot of sense when you read how he thinks about advisory. He's a regular contributor to Accounting Today, the Rosenberg Associates blog, and right here at Inside Public Accounting. He also just released a book, CPA Firm Strategic Planning, Your Roadmap for Long-Term Success, which outlines Rosenberg's proprietary 5I strategic planning framework. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chelsea. Happy to be back.
Yeah. So your section of the article opens with this idea of where the puck is going. And you talk about automation pushing firms to find new ways to add value. So when you're actually sitting across those firm leaders, what does that pressure feel like for them right now? Is it urgent or is it kind of just an abstract pressure?
It's both. So on the one hand, when I do strategic planning with firms, we're hearing a lot about AI, and in every room, partners are talking about AI and they're feeling FOMO. They're feeling anxiety. They're feeling like they're behind. And I had one firm who felt very behind. They talked to a technology consultant and the tech consultant said, you're using everything that's out there. And so, but I think a lot of firms feel that way. They feel like I'm missing it. So I think there's this anxiety around, I need to get better on tech. On the advisory side, it's more abstract. So when we bring it to that layer, every partner says, yeah, we need to move to advisory. Let's do that. But I think fewer partners have a specific idea of what does that mean. I think people feel like I'm a tax partner. That's somebody else's world to do, to figure out. I'm going to do my thing and we're going to do advisory. But there's no face or name. And so I think having a dream to do advisory versus having a specific plan is very different. And I feel like that's where a gap is right now.
I feel like there's a quote there. A dream without a plan is simply a wish. Maybe I got that wrong, but something like
there
that.
There you go. Yeah.
So our survey found that about 80% of firms say that advisory has higher margins than their compliance work. You pushed back a little bit on that. You said that advisory isn't some magical place where margins are always better. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. So I did take a little bit of a contrarian view on this. where 80% of firms have higher margins on advisory, even if a little bit. And so that's great. And I'm happy for that. I think my position is more of awareness or a caveat to say it's not a guarantee, right? It doesn't mean just because you move into advisory, you punch your ticket, and that business line will always and forever have higher margins. Or even if your competitor firm has higher margins, it doesn't mean that you will. I've seen firms lose money on bookkeeping. I've seen firms, you know, payroll is a life suck for some firms. And it depends, it is very profitable for others, you know, in the CAS department. So I think how you operationalize it matters. And tax planning and CFO stuff is a little more adjacent. But as soon as you get outside of that, you're really like standing up new business models. HR consulting has nothing to do with IT consulting, has nothing to do with wealth management, has nothing to do with business valuation. And so as we stack on more services, I want firms to think about a business plan for each one of those. Who are the customers? What's our offering? What's our pricing? What's the staffing model? The credentials are different in each discipline. And I think that's tuning that business model will generate the margins. And I think one last thought. So you said I was a business valuation professional and I have that certification. One of the adages of business valuation is that if you have above average margins, you will attract competition and they will pull you down to the average. No company is exempt from that, right? Competition, free market is going to come in and pull you down. So even if you have higher margins today, you have to defend them. And with the way the AI and automation and just disruption is happening, there's going to be a lot of defense you're going to have to do to stay there.
And advisory is a very big umbrella. So saying that just we have higher margins overall is possibly an average of all of their different service lines. But that doesn't mean that every service line has a higher margin.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So talking about those service lines and building those businesses from the ground up. So for firms that are trying to start that, how do you think about which service lines are a good fit versus ones that they should maybe avoid or aren't a good fit for their firm?
Yeah, I think just I'm a practical guy, Chelsea. So I think, practically speaking, I would say start with the low hanging fruit. And to me, the usual suspects there is if you do tax work, do tax planning, right? Uh-huh. Start asking more proactive questions. I think a lot of people can make that shift. They already do some of that work. It's just systematizing it and formalizing that. In addition, moving up to controller and outsource CFO work, I think is a natural extension. It's a little bit different maybe from what some firms are doing, but it's not totally different. I think once you've covered those bases, I would think about your customers and what they need. So I also did the new product design, and they think about what are the pain points and how do you solve them of your client, not you, not what you want to sell them. What are their pain points? So I would think about the story of your business to your customer. What's the next service that makes sense to them? Mm-hmm. So if you have a lot of business owners, maybe it's succession planning or business valuation. If you have a lot of high net worth individuals, it might be wealth management, and that kind of stuff. So it's thinking if you slap on HR consulting and it has nothing to do with your current offering. I worked at Clorox in the beginning of my career, and they bought all these unrelated businesses. So they had cat litter and STP motor oil, and they had Glad trash bags, and they had nothing to do. And people didn't even know they were owned by the same company. You don't want that.
Right.
You want sort of a natural collection of services that really make sense to your clients.
So do you recommend that firms consider merging in a new practice or building something from the ground up by upskilling their current staff or hiring current staff or maybe a mix of all three? Like what is the best way to do that?
Yes. I think it depends, right? It depends on your situation, but I think some disciplines you can build. I think just practically speaking, when I look at some firms, you have to do sort of the talent audit and the skills mm-hmm. audit to say, like, have we ever done expert witness testimony before? If not, we might need to acquire a person at least who has. Or sometimes you kind of do have the skills in-house, you just need to put a business model around it. I think also rate of growth matters too. How fast, how much progress are we trying to make, how fast or how sophisticated? You may have to buy that to get a faster growth rate.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you got to look at what it is that you're trying to build to know how to build it. Yeah, makes sense. Okay. One of the surprising findings to me in the survey was that 44% of firms said their advisory work is proactive, future-focused, and holistic. You mentioned that surprised you as well. So what are you actually seeing when you walk into a firm? Is the reality matching that self-assessment that they gave us on the survey?
No.
That
was the one data point where it just, and again, maybe I hope that was the real answer for those firms. I rewrote that question in the survey probably 10 times. And I don't know that I still got the wording right, but what I was trying to get at is what I see at many firms, a more reactive, sort of siloed, like the client asks you for a thing and you say, oh, it's probably 7 hours of work, and you bill them, and you do the thing and you bill them 7 hours of work, and maybe it was not compliance and you say, check the box, I just did advisory work. Okay, I get it, right? But I see a lot of firms in that bucket. What I was trying to contrast that with is a more proactive, collaborative, value-driven conversation where the client says, hey, I think I need this thing. And you take that as a point of information and say, okay, tell me more. I'm going to start to peel back the onion. I'm going to start to ask you questions, because that may be the symptom and not really the real thing. the real value creator for you. So I'm going to help orchestrate that conversation. We're going to get to the root cause, and then that's what I'm going to solve with an eye towards value creation. And I think that's where a lot of this automation is going, is I think the more, you know, commoditized compliance stuff is going to be automated. And even, you know, if it's compliant, if it's easy advisory, there can be some automation. I think this relationship and being a thinking partner and helping push the client is really where the puck is going.
Yeah. Can you give an example of something where a firm asks for a specific service, but after you peel back the onion, like you said, you discover what that other thing they're really looking for is?
I think one example of a firm that I think did that well, I don't have a lot of examples of that because I think not a lot of firms are quite there yet. But one thing that's kind of a simple example that I thought was done well is there's a firm, I worked with a firm that does tax returns for farmers, and they were like, we're real well known in that area. And they said there was a competitor that not only knows how to do tax returns for farmers, but they then, as farms come up for sale, talk about estate issues and talk about business valuation and talk about all the family stuff that thing rolls out of there. And I think that to me is an example of looking at that. Now, I don't know who navigated that conversation, but I think that firm as a business model said, there's a bigger piece, there's a bigger value layer than just that tax layer. And we took our farm knowledge and turned that into a niche that's really creating value for the client.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So two biggest constraints to growing advisory that were listed in the survey were talent availability and partner time and alignment. About 69% of firms combined said either of those. So you made a point that smaller firms feel this more acutely. What do you think smaller firms can realistically do about it, given they don't have the same resources as a top 100 firm?
Yeah, I think it's actually less about resources. So it is true, right? I think the bigger firms have more sophistication and more resources, particularly on the hiring side, and, you know, in other ways too. But I think a smaller firm, it's more about indecision than lack of resource to me. So again, partners, we go to a retreat and I talk to firms and they're like, advisory. But then you're like, what does that mean? What are you going to do? Who's going to do it? And, you know, kind of how they can approach that. One way that we approach it that I think is helpful is talking about the firms in strategic planning, talking about the strengths of the firm. We kind of start with where they are today. What are you strong at? What are the leadership team? What are your individual strengths? What is the vision of the firm? Advisory is usually part of that. What does that look like? And then we'll make a one-year project plan for different initiatives. So advisory might be one of those initiatives, but we're going to give owners to that plan. Now we're getting tactical. We're going to say, who's going to be the champion that if I come a-looking for a result, it's you that I'm going to talk to. Who's going to own that? Mm-hmm. With the one-year, six-month, three-month objectives. Now we're moving from, we did a couple of things. We aligned the group. So we got past indecision or like, you know, infighting. And then we got into a specific plan that also takes on the resourcing. Oh, we got to hire two people. We need to get a software. So we've sort of artfully got to a place and now they have a plan with accountability. So I think, you know, you don't have to do that exact thing, but I think that kind of flow is very helpful for getting firms out of stuck and into action.
We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store. Well, I'm sure if you want to grow that advisory piece significantly, you're going to have to also take a look at partner compensation and how the efforts, if you're building something from the ground up, you really, aren't probably going to be as focused on building your current book of business. And so that might look a little bit different for a year or two. So really stepping back and saying, how do we need to change our partner compensation models and our governance models to reflect this long-term planning as opposed to short-term, what am I doing this next year? Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it said differently, I would say sometimes there's barriers that would chain you to the old way of business. So if we say, go build, you know, CAS from ground up, and I'm like, but we don't have CAS revenue.
Right.
So what happens, right? I have the whole book of business over an audit that's not going anywhere. How do I move? And those are governance and comp questions. And I think if those don't become aligned to support the true building of that advisor, it's just going to pull, it's like a rubber band. You're going to try and then get pulled back.
Yeah. So it seems like that partner compensation is really a lever for advisory growth, that what gets paid is what we see performed. So when you're helping firms design comp structures around advisory, where are they going wrong and where are they succeeding?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think where they kind of go wrong or systems that we see is not as helpful is a very traditional system, which is like an ownership or entitlement model. Uh-huh. And this kind of makes some sense. A lot of other businesses do it this way, or industries where I buy 20% of the firm and then I get 20% of the firm's profits, right? And that's sort of entitled to that. And then I sell 20% of the firm on the back end. And, you know, the accounting industry has used that in the past. I think the downside of that is if I'm getting 20% of the profits, I don't have a lot of incentive to keep showing up or at least performing above a certain level. I think most partners don't totally phone it in, but I think especially as you get near the end of your career or just busy in life, you may say, I'm gonna not work as hard this. Somebody else is going to take the advisory piece, right? And mm-hmm. I'll just keep doing my piece. And there's no carrot or stick to change that behavior. What we like to see instead is what we call a performance-based comp model, where you see private equity has taken this to the extreme. Well, pay you, you know, very much based on performance. It doesn't have to be extreme, but to put real money against what you define as good performance. And there's some art to what is good performance. But I think some of the ways that we see and some of the ways that came out in the survey too, for firms that used it, you could have a discretionary bonus where the compensation committee says there's, you know, these five things that we would like partners to work on. To the extent you work on those, we're going to allocate some money based on that. You could have a more specific commission based on advisory sales that you generated that year, and say, if you go out and cross sell or bring in business, we will give you dollars, you know, kind of some percentage. Or it could be like an individual partner goal based on that, or a scorecard. So I think there's a lot of ways to slice that up. Sometimes mm-hmm. that depends how easy it is to track or what your goals are as a firm. But putting meaningful dollars, not like $2,000, because partners will ignore you. They'll say, it's easier to not change. For your $2,000, thanks, but no thanks, right? But if you put real money on it, then you can get people's attentions. The top performers who want to go there will go there. Uh-huh. And the people who will not go there, you know, will at least start to fund those other people. And consider real change doesn't change everything, but it can really stir a lot of change at the partner level.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a lot of parallels right now with that partner compensation discussion and how we are shifting in this new environment with embracing technology and, you know, changing our governance models and really just upskilling and being part of this new profession that has so many moving parts and so many moving pieces. I think a lot of firms are really stepping back and saying, are our partner systems set up to embrace change and reward change, or are they set up to reward status quo? And if it is, then how do we, you know, pivot that to get new, fresh partners in with different perspectives? And I think, you know, that this conversation really resonates with a lot of other conversations we're having about partner compensation right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, the shift to advisory is not the only one happening, right?
Yes.
Many big shifts happening simultaneously.
Yeah. So towards the end of your piece, you talked about the client experience and the puck is going towards a more elevated, integrated advisory model. So especially with PE consolidation and AI that's freeing up accountants to be more consultative, what does that actually look like in practice? And what does a firm have to do to get there?
I think what it looks like in practice. So I think a lot of people have talked about, I'll talk about it in two parts, customer experience and consulting. On the consulting side, a lot of people have talked about this. To be more forward-looking, advisory, people talk about you're going to have a dashboard of KPIs and you're helping the business owner. I think, however you want to say it, you're getting closer to the decision-making and value creation with the business owner. You're not just giving them numbers, but you're giving them insight. And I would say even helping them make decisions or getting them closer to that value. So I think that's one thing. And I think you see CFO services are a nice example of that, where firms are starting to really take that more proactive look. I think something I haven't seen firms do as much that's needed is shifting the customer experience. And I think it's kind of cliche, but you think of like Disney or like the Ritz-Carlton. They think about, when you go to Disney, you're going to be in all these different environments. They think about, how does the customer feel at all points? Uh-huh. How is their total experience with us? And we want that. We want to manage that experience and your expectations and your engagement with our brand. I think the more we add service lines and touches to a client, I think the more cohesive and powerful that has to be. I think especially as we get out of compliance, again, it's that relationship. How do we feel working with this firm? How do you do that? I think, again, you have to have a vision for the firm, and you said it, and then put kind of like the structures in place behind that. Uh-huh. It's the compensation. It's the government. It's getting away from leading like a partnership where there's multiple owners who say, well, I'm an owner too. I get to decide. And if I say no, nobody gets to do anything. I think that's gone, right? I think that those days, that's going to really hinder your firm. If we can operate as one firm, even across many services and still be cohesive, I think that's going to be where the magic is.
I like that. And I haven't really heard that said that way before, but like stepping back and saying from a client perspective, when you're working with the CAS service line versus the tax service versus, you know, getting your wealth management done, like, does that feel like the same firm? It may be different individuals, which is fine, but do the processes feel the same? Does the structure feel the same? Like if it doesn't feel the same, then that doesn't keep your client at your firm. Why wouldn't they just go to another firm to get the service if it doesn't feel like the same firm internally? So yeah, making sure that you are managed. Do you suggest firms having somebody that kind of audits all of the systems to make sure that it feels cohesive? Or is that something that the partners should do or the service leaders? Like whose job is that?
It's a great question. Marketing, I almost feel like it's probably somebody in marketing almost. I mean, I think it's an executive thing, but maybe it's a sub into marketing to say it's a brand. There's sort of a brand promise in there for me of like, what if we are one firm, like you said, even across multiple people, how does that feel? How do we want it to feel? And is that consistent across all those domains?
Yeah. Because that even bleeds into technology and billing and really every aspect of the client delivery experience. And how does that look? So, yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I like that a lot. So if you had to give one piece of advice to a firm that is serious about accelerating their advisory growth in the next 12 months, they're not just going to talk about like, let's do more advisory, but they actually want to make some significant investments. What do you tell them that they need to do? Where do they start?
I think make it concrete. I think when we talk about advisory, again, it could mean a lot of things, and it's this big long-term shift, and there's a lot of moving parts. I think to get past that vagueness, you have to get into specifics. So I would say, put a line in the sand, pick a number. We're going to have each tax partner convert 20 tax return clients to advisory monthly clients this year. Put names to it, put dates to it, and then work on that. You're going to learn along the way. And you don't have to do everything in 1 year. So pick the most meaningful area, put specifics on it, work towards it, learn, and then go from there, right? Keep rolling out more specific initiatives, and that can evolve. You might get there faster and be like, okay, now we can go, you know, really ramp this up, or there might be setbacks that you're learning from. I think another piece of advice on top of that or over that would be, keep communicating the story of why are we doing this change to yourself, to the partners, to the team. We aren't shifting to advisory because it's easy. We aren't shifting to advisory because we know how to do it. We're shifting to advisory because that is where the puck is going, right? That is where the industry is going. That is where the technology is pushing us. And that's where more value can be created. And so I think accounting has had sort of a boring reputation for a long time. Every movie ever, the accountant is the boring person. And I think this is a moment where that can change. I think our role in our DNA as accountants, as you know, advisors, is really shifting or can shift. And I think there's this moment where we can reinvent ourselves in a positive way. And I think the more we see that vision and talk about it to our team members, I think it makes the change more meaningful and kind of easier to implement and keep moving forward.
Yeah. And I think that communication to the staff is very important, because not only is that where the profession is going and what our firm needs to do, but I think it's also how we deliver more value for our clients. That's how, you know, we really, you know, build our relationship with our clients and help them be able to do more as well. Like, let's move beyond just we're doing your tax return every year and really providing more, you know, substantive value to our clients who are also experiencing a whole lot of change right now. So it's not only beneficial for us selfishly, but it's also beneficial for, you know, the economy as a whole and our communities. So I think framing that, you know, generally is going to be really helpful, both for retaining our staff, having them understand the change, and for telling a better story about the profession and all of the amazing things that we're able to do.
Absolutely. And staff like it too, right? They want exciting work. So I think there's many, many reasons to do that.
Yeah. So Matt, this has been such a great conversation. I think what I am taking away is that advisory is not just going to be a service line decision, but it's an identity for firms. And we saw that in the data. The firms that are doing well aren't just the ones that have like tons of menu offerings of new services, but they're aligning their culture and their compensation and their client experience around being those proactive advisors. And that looks different than what we've seen in an accounting firm 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So Matt, thank you so much for your time today and for the perspective you brought to the article that we wrote together. For our listeners, anybody that wants to dig deeper, we'll have a link to order the piece in the full IPA Insights in the show notes. And if you want to connect with Matt or learn more about the work of Rosenberg Associates, we'll have that in our show notes as well. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can click below to subscribe and check out more from Inside Public Accounting.